Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 47 years of doing therapy. And these tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been gifted. You can go there and download the actual worksheet itself, simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of the tools has improved the quality of their life. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that frequently provokes comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it puts a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code, and we can have a talk. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 266th day of the year. Today's lesson reads simply, My Holy Self Abides in You, Creator's Offspring. So, Father, You gave me all of your sons and daughters to be my saviors and my counselors in sight, the bearers of your holy voice to me. In all of my brothers and sisters, you are reflected, and in them does Christ look back upon me from my higher self. Let not your offspring forget your holy name. Let not your offspring forget his holy source. Let not your offspring forget that their name is yours. This day, we enter into paradise calling upon God's name and on our own, acknowledging that our higher self is in each of us, united in the holy love of the Creator. How many saviors the creation has given us? Infinite. How can we lose the way to the Creator when he has filled the world with those who point us towards him and who have given us the sight to see them? Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment, lesson 266, is titled, Today Would Be a Really Good Day to Forgive Someone, Part 3. She quotes A Course in Miracles as saying, All that is asked of you is to make room for truth. Pam writes, I hate when this happens, when lessons like 266 insist that all the Nimrods in my life are really saviors in disguise, that they are sent by the dude himself so I can find my holy self. Fat chance, my ego says. Okay, but if you insist, I'll try the four questions that Byron Katie suggests asking about all stories that cause me pain. Question number one, is it true that the ogre I referred to yesterday is really a jerk? Me? Well, you better believe it's true. He's the most small-minded person I've ever met. He lies. He makes up stories. How else could a person be expected to react to his, but Pam, I hear the Holy S saying, this is a yes or a no question. Me? Okay, yeah, it's true. Question number two. Are you absolutely 100% sure it's true? Me? Well, no, there's a tiny possibility that it's not true. Question number three. So how does holding on to this thought make you feel? Me? It makes me angry, ready to attack, quick to defend, wanting to build walls. I waste long hours plotting my revenge. Holy Spirit points out, so in other words, not a good look. Question number four, so who would I be without that thought? Me. Well, gosh, I can hardly imagine. I've worn that thought like my own hair. I've held on to it for so long, it seems like the gospel truth. But maybe, just maybe, it's possible that I'd feel a tad bit better if I deleted that story from my hard drive. It might lower the energetic wall that has come between me and this person. Byron Katie's The Work then asks for a turnaround. Me. Well, the turnaround would be I'm the one who's boring and small-minded and holding on to my story. How could that be true? Well, me, it could be true because I've bored anyone who will listen with my, quote, my story about how this person has done me wrong. And I've been sure, also known as small-minded, that I'm right. And I've held on to this story ever since he sent me some nasty texts. In fact, I haven't had any communication with him for 12 long months. So, okay, I get it. And once again, I offer just a tad bit of willingness. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson for today. Everyone I see is my teacher and savior. Everyone I see is offspring of the creation, part of the flow of creation. And as such, when I look upon them through the mind of Christ, through the eyes of the Christ mind, I am directed back towards the source of creation. So that's our Course in Miracles and our Course in Miracles lesson work for today. And we have about, as usual, 50 minutes to talk, to converse, to kibitz, to question, to answer, to ruminate. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and you'll help us make this show more relevant to you. What would be useful? A useful way to spend this next 50 minutes. I thought I would announce that today's a Thursday, and so tonight we have a Thursday support group with Zoom from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, available absolutely free to anybody who might benefit from a communal exploration of these tools and their application in our lives. All the information you need to join us for that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And it's useful to remind people that we have a separate login page for Tuesday and a separate one for Thursday. I should also mention that on Monday, I'm conducting an interview during the time that I would normally be on this internet show. So Monday's show will be a replay of the interview I did yesterday with Mira Rubin. And it runs about 40 minutes, and Jeannie will pick up the slack. And then, if all goes well, we'll have another couple interviews that are relevant enough to the Mind Shifters radio show that we'll have other highlight shows and interviews to play in the future. Should let people know who Mira Rubin is. She's a transformational coach, visionary, and author. She's a host of two podcasts, Sustainability Now and The Core Connection. Mira is the originator of the Core Connection process, and that is a unique synthesis of an evolution of multiple modalities, including neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, and applied kinesiology. And she likes to tell people that when you do that work, it precipitates sometimes miraculous shifts of being that result in expansive new opportunities for accomplishment and an expanded experience of freedom and an empowered stewardship of your own life. So she will be, or the interview that I did with her yesterday will be available on Monday during this show time slot. And as I read that, it tells me I better make a note to actually record that intro so that that'll go with that interview so people will know who we're interviewing. So what's on your mind? What I have, as usual, things to talk about. But we have time. I'll leave a space for somebody to raise a hand before I launch into what I was going to talk about today. I was reading a book on grief. There's a book written by David Kessler titled The Sixth Stage of Grief. And he is a co-author with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross of the book On Grief and Dying. And lots of people in the field know about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her stages of grief or death and dying and acceptance and anger and denial and resignation and all that stuff. It's all woven in there in these steps. Someone recommended this book to me. And while it's a really good idea to work with whatever has happened in my life and work to find meaning, even if it's the death of a loved one, death of a child, death of a parent, etc., and create meaning in my life, which gives my life a better chance for it to be healthy, joyful, expansive, loving, etc. And while all of that's true, he has a segment in the book this morning that made me stop listening and turn it off, because he's talking about having this anger catharsis. And there are people who have promoted that over the years. Back in the early days of my therapy work, well, not really the early days, but at one phase in my therapy work, it was very popular to get bataka bats, these foam bats, and have them in your office and have your patients beat on the furniture or beat on their heads or beat on each other with these foam bats so nobody gets hurt. But, of course, you get to yell and scream and act out this rage. And, of course, the theory was that this would provide a release. Notice that was their theory. It didn't prove out, though. Here's a book that was very popular, and it was so popular that it's been around for 20 years. And when they did the 20th anniversary edition, they revised it and updated it. I think they, this was in 2008 that they did the 20-year anniversary, so it was 1988 that they published it. And it's called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples, Harville Hendricks. And one of the things about this book that made it so popular was there are actual exercises to do to improve your marriage or your relationship. And in the preface or the foreword to the 20th anniversary edition, they talk about what's different and why they did a 20th anniversary edition. And then it says, well, what we changed in this book, while much of the 2001 text remains the same, we've made some important revisions. The first is to use more inclusive language, and the second is to highlight his wife Helen's role in the development of that book and the Imago Dialogue, which is part of it. And the third one is, it says, the most substantive revision is that we replaced the original chapter 11 with a new chapter. This chapter title used to be called Containing Rage, and it was designed to help couples express their anger and frustration that they had carried over from childhood. The chapter described an exercise called the Full Container that guided each partner in venting his or her anger while helping the other person listen with more compassion and just be accepting. Well, thank you for expressing your rage at me, etc. At that time, we believed that this catharsis would reduce the amount of tension in their day-to-day interactions. The opposite proved to be true. We discovered that the more these couples practiced this exercise, the angrier they became with each other in their daily lives. So we decided we better change this up, since now we have proof that this works to the opposite effect we want. And so they created a new chapter titled Creating a Sacred Space. So the book Finding Meaning has a whole segment on getting people to express their rage and their grief, thinking that that's useful and beneficial. And while some people might be stuck in denial, and being in denial of our emotions isn't very useful, encouraging people to rage over time has been demonstrated time and time again, and here's another example of it with the Harville Hendricks book, that it produces more rage than it does release and resolution. So, 563-999-3581. Comments and questions are welcome. Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. There are a couple of things you touched on which are so interesting. My sister-in-law was a psychotherapist. This is Kim Bingham's sister. And she used to run what she calls anger workshops, which were invitations for couples and anybody to express their rage using Bataka bats. There was no talk about responsible communication, I'm afraid. It was not that I remember. And my experience was exactly what those authors discovered, is that it only made things worse to let that kind of feeling out. And I love that Michael calls it, expressing your rage, he calls it addiction. Rage isn't even, what does he say? It's not an emotion?
He says
it's an addiction, or it's a drug. That's what he says.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
a, drug.
A drug.
It is totally, that's been my experience,
most,
totally.
Yeah. That's his most recent way of talking about it.
Yeah.
His way of talking about it has evolved over the years, as, you know, here's Harville Hendrix. They had a way of talking about it 20 years ago, and they finally discovered, hey, you know what, it works the opposite of the way we thought, so we better change it up.
Right.
And Michael used to talk about anger as an emotion, and sometime in the past year or two, he got a download that said, wait a minute, it's just a drug, it's not even an emotion. And, of course, it's just language. It doesn't mean that that's the truth with a capital T. It's just a way to think about it and language about it so that people can think differently and then usher themselves into a different kind of an experience.
Right. That's amazing that it all came together like that after so many years of the common knowledge was that anger needs to be expressed. It'll hurt you if you don't express it. You'll get heart disease and illnesses if you don't express your rage, and it turns out to be the exact opposite. Whoa, how much of a mess we made with that over those years.
Yeah, the same kind of mess they made with promoting Camel cigarettes because doctors preferred them, and promoting it's okay to drink when you're pregnant because blah, blah, blah. I mean, we are really nowhere near as intelligent, knowledgeable, and sophisticated as we try to pretend that we are as
yeah,
a species and a culture.
So true. Well, I think one of the wonderful byproducts of discovering this is Michael calls it responsibility communication, but it just means careful, considering, informed, self-aware communication, owning your garbage so that you're not blaming anyone or playing victim. I mean, I'm making an off-the-cuff summary, but it's wonderful that not only did we stop thinking of rage as an appropriate and needed and necessary response for good health and good relationships, but we actually went so far in another direction as to discover responsible communication and use it and have worksheets, and owning our own stuff came out of that, probably, maybe not directly, but to admit any negative feeling I have is mine. I generate it. It's an error. This is phenomenal. And I suppose
and it's liberating.
Yeah, it is. And it's full of hope because you have some control over things, because it's about you. You're not at the mercy of anyone. I mean, victimhood was just a condition that everybody had to endure, and it doesn't exist anymore, ideally. Anyway,
well, it's just a way of thinking about what happened.
Yeah.
I can think about it as though I'm a victim of this, that, or the other, or I can think about it as though I am an autonomous, creative, experiencing being, and I have experienced this, that, or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And just that shift in languaging, for me, creates a powerful difference. The difference between saying
right,
I was a victim of this or that compared to I experienced this or that.
That's so true. Now, the lesson today, especially the grout part of it, because it was, you know, a universal situation. Everybody has somebody or more than one somebody in their lives who, that they've written off in some way. And I love how she wrote about it with such almost self-deprecating honesty. But it triggered, I mean, I've talked many times about a friend named Julie who I haven't seen for over a year, like a year and a half now. Last night, I dreamt about her, and we ran this huge giveaway event the other day, and a woman came in masked and with glasses. So her face was covered enough that I thought this was Julie. But this woman was very, very thin and possibly not well. And my first thought was, oh, my God, Julie has had such a bad year. This is terrible. She's not well, all this stuff. And I'm looking at her. And finally, I went closer to the woman and looked at her, and I wasn't even sure. I think I wanted her to be Julie so badly that I kind of made it up. And finally, I got up the nerve to say, tell me your name. My name's Susan. And she said, oh, it's Helen. And I, you know, had this huge sigh of relief, and I said, you remind me so much of somebody that I just had to introduce myself. And then it went, you know, to on to normal things. But that dream, I think, triggered the dream I had about Julie last night. And in the dream, something wonderful was happening insofar as Julie was talking to me in a regular way, and we were calmly discussing what had happened and maybe we could be friends. Well, I, in my daytime life, and I continue to think that we can't be. And it isn't exactly like Pam Grout having a grudge. I don't have a grudge, but I think I know something that maybe I don't know. And maybe I do know, and if I do know it, I need to be able to be strong enough to not pursue going back into this. I mean, this would be a repeat of trouble if I went back in the relationship with Julie, as I think it would be. I know I'm, I hope you're following this, but I did a worksheet on it this morning just to sort out, you know, am I missing her so much? Do I think she might be, do I think after reading Grout, I thought maybe I've made this up and maybe it isn't true and maybe we could get along? I don't know. That's where I'm sort of stuck. So I did this.
And so what happened with the worksheet?
I ended up reading texts that she had sent me, which I had saved on my iPhone, and deciding that I can't. My enlightened goal is to wish her well from a distance and not try to get in touch with her. But then you were talking about grief, and I feel grief about this. But I don't think I should get in touch with her. That's as far as my enlightened goal goes. It might be a wrong goal, but reading these texts, I had said to her, you know, Julie, we keep getting into such trouble when we talk on the phone or when we go for a walk. We fight every time. How about we write to each other? Her answer was, I don't want to deal with any superficial emails. And I said, well, I'm offering that because that's the only thing I think I can do right now. And she didn't answer, and I never spoke to her again.
Okay,
and
so,
I read those again, and I thought, yeah, what?
So the idea is to explore if you have sadness, when you know, when your rational mind is telling you, I can send her loving thoughts, but we really aren't good, you know, partners for a relationship, and then you have sadness, then you do the worksheets on your sadness. Because you're not grieving the loss of the relationship at this point because the relationship wasn't satisfactory, wasn't fulfilling. What
right.
You're grieving is the loss of some kind of a fantasy. Or it's the mental associations that are getting stirred up from you, in you from this, are echoing other actual losses. from your past, and you want to be willing to do the worksheets until that the set of memories or traumas or energies from the past are surfaced and, you know, integrated.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to find that it's not about grieving the loss of the relationship because you didn't enjoy the relationship.
That's such a good point, Dr. Tim. Why didn't I think of that? Mm.
But if you
I
have
think
grief
I'm
come
the
up
loss
as
of a,
grieving the loss of what?
The possibility of a good friendship. We kept plugging at it. We kept trying. But I think, you know, there was a kind of intensity there because we were both making an effort, but it was
yes,
bombing every time.
And when it doesn't work like that, it usually has something to do with either there's a mismatch of goals and purpose.
Mm-hmm. Definitely
or
true.
There is some deep wounds in one or both people that just keep getting triggered that aren't getting resolved.
Mm.
So the example of the first one might be, we just have different reasons. Just, I want to be really good friends with this guy because he's a millionaire, man. And I heard this lecture once that my net worth is going to be the average of the 10 people I hang out with most. And so I need a millionaire in my circle. And that's why I will do anything to have this guy like me and, or, you know, to have this woman invite me to her parties or whatever. And that's my motivation for the relationship. And
yeah.
Her motivation might be she just wanted the connection, the friendship, the sense of humor, the confidant, whatever. And it keeps clashing because I'm not viewing her as an equal, and she's trying to view me as an equal, and it's not working. So that's one example. The other example might be that I'm so wounded that I need somebody to just always fit my expectations of what a friend would be and should do, and every time this other person deviates from that, I get so wounded that I attack them, and I tell them how they've attacked me and they've ruined my life and they've disrespected me, and there is no way to put a good friendship together in that mess.
You know, Dr. Tim, what you just said wasn't me, but it was what was happening with Julie. In fact, I'm wondering, are you psychic or something? I mean, our friendship
I'm just talking about the basic ways that these things go wrong. Those are two very common ways where people who try to have a good relationship, they try and try, and it just fails because of those two primary reasons. They either have different reasons for being in the relationship and different goals for it, and then those clash, or one or both parties are so wounded that every time the other one doesn't live up to their expectations, they lash out.
Wow. Well, it's probably a combination, but much more intensely the second one. Hang on one sec. I've got somebody at the door. Hey, thank you. Oh, you poor soaked person. A very soaked Amazon delivery person just put something in my door, and we're having a flood storm here. They've been warning us that there's going to be flooding. It's amazing to see. I just got home. In fact, well, I shouldn't. Just remind me that I want to tell you something totally different that happened today, which was just great. But we're on to something that's very, very helpful. Yeah.
And that being that if your partner is wounded or if you're wounded, then every time they don't meet your needs or you don't meet theirs, you feel so wounded that you attack them. And that precludes mm-hmm. any actual connection in relationship.
Well, that was happening, and I don't know if it's remediable, but that just gives me a little bit of a toehold. I will do that worksheet. I didn't do it from the right angle. Yeah. Okay.
Well, the angle you did it from was the right angle. This is just a different angle. I mean, there might be countless different angles. If there's disappointment, if there's grief, if there's resentment, all of those are valid angles to do the worksheet on.
Yeah. I'm thrilled, by the way, to be able to hear Mira Rubin tomorrow and hear your talk. That's great.
That would be Monday.
Monday, yeah. Tomorrow's Saturday. Woo.
Tomorrow is Friday.
Thanks.
The rain has soaked your calendar and you don't know what day it is.
Okay, thanks. I did go teach this morning, which I'm supposed to do on Thursday, so at least as far as I got this morning, things were all right. Now I've just lopped a day off, a week. Okay, thanks.
So what is the wonderful thing that you wanted to share?
Well, I was telling you about this friend from Iraq via Turkey for 8 years. She came to give a demonstration in my Pilates class this morning of belly dancing. And she is not a teacher of dance, so what she did was put on this absolutely gorgeous music and dance for the class and invite them to dance along with her. But belly dancing isn't simple. It's got moves that in our culture we don't do very often, and I became her student, and we were doing our best. I think the students liked it a lot. She did about 15 minutes, and then we went back to me teaching, but then we went on a grocery shop, and then I just took her home, and she said, you know, stay and have lunch. And I said, well, I go on this radio show. It's interactive. It's sort of spiritual and psychological, and it's hard to explain. She said, give me the number. She may be on right now. I don't know if she is. I gave her the number. She said, oh, I love stuff like that. So I wanted to introduce you to a woman named Marwa. And if she's on the phone and understands about pressing 1, I would invite her to press 1 right now. But she may not be on. She was putting groceries away and so forth. Anyway,
well,
I just wanted to say
no unfamiliar numbers on the board.
Okay, and it would probably be a 610 number like mine. I could look it up, but that's okay. And I don't mean to. Well, maybe I do mean to pressure her to press 1, but if she's not on there. Anyway, she may come on. I'm going to. She has a lot of trauma to deal with, and I have been thinking about how great the tools would be, and she's fluent enough in English that she could probably jump right in, and I'm just hoping that'll happen. So anyway, Dr. Tim, your intro, I missed the first 5 minutes and then came in when you were doing the Pam Grout, and I couldn't wait to get home to really be able to concentrate. But anyway, thanks for your help again.
You're welcome. I encourage people to think about what we're talking about, and the Harville Hendrix people have now, you know, 20 years of experience, more than that, because this thing was republished in 2008. But it demonstrates that it is not productive to go out and what do we call it? Rage and expend your catharsis and just and engage in it over and over again, because all it does is feed you to experience more of the energetic experience of whatever you're pouring your mind energy into. You know how we talk about how whatever you focus on, you create more of, and each of us has the infinite capacity to choose the focus of our conscious awareness in each moment, and it is that choice of focus that literally creates our experience of life. So if I focus on rage and all the things I'm angry about that that person ever did or have ever occurred in my relationship, all I'm going to do is create more of an experience within me of the rage that I first created when that person's behavior didn't match my expectations and or my goals weren't met by that person, then I created the emotion of rage. They didn't make me rage. That's part of the power of this system of observation, is realizing there's an actual mechanism that creates my experience of emotions. And that whole mechanism lies inside me. And it is not dictated by the outside events. It isn't even resonated by the outside events. It gets resonated by the interpretation that I choose or decide upon and place on the outside events. Because the outside event could happen and I can choose a neutral interpretation and there's no upset. And I might still have plenty of upset in me. I might have real big upset later this afternoon or tomorrow. But when this event happens, if I place the interpretation on it of, oh, that's just okay, oh, that person's doing their best, oh, they didn't mean that, then I don't get as upset. And I may have no upset. So the mechanism of creation of emotions is internal and it is discernible. And when I look at that and I'm willing to observe it rather than be driven by the conditioning of my culture or family, it is liberating. But I need to take responsibility for what I've done. I need to be willing to question everything I think I know. I need to be willing to cancel my need to be right. That's one of the biggest, most difficult challenges in this work. I had somebody in my office last night, and he sat down and talked for a solid 10 minutes, maybe more, about how upset he was about the events that happened the previous Wednesday. So here he is, 8 days later, still raging about something that he thought might happen that didn't happen, but he thought it might because somebody said that was going to happen. And I kept trying to come back to get him to see, will you just take a breath and notice how tight, tense, pained you feel right now? And he kept coming back and saying, yeah, this doesn't feel good at all. And it's because they, and then there's the focus, the external focus. And as long as he kept his focus on the external, he stayed in the pain. He stayed in the tension. He stayed in the rage. He stayed in the hurt. He stayed in the confusion. So can I generate the willingness to cancel my need to be right? That's the core of this work. That's one of the primary cores in this work. And when I do that, be willing to embrace whatever happens. I mean, I might have fear come up. Oh, my God, what's going to happen if I cancel my need to be right, if I don't fight for what I believe is right? Well, who am I if I'm not the person who always fights for what's right? I might have so concretized my sense of self or my identification with this Tim as the crusader, you know, the savior of people who are wrong, that I don't know who I would be or what I would be, and I fear I won't be here at all. I fear it'll be painful or embarrassing. So if I'm fearing what would happen if I cancel my need to be right, I may resist canceling my need to be right. And the more I hold on to my being right, especially when I have a negative emotional state going, the more I lock myself into that experience. So, you know, what if your idea that you really should have a relationship with this person is not actually right? What if it isn't true that you should be able to create a loving, peaceful interaction pattern with anybody that you choose? What if that's not the truth of life? Well, when you start and you have this goal, this intention to be in this loving, compassionate relationship with another person, and all you get is frustration and sadness and fear and pain, maybe a good thing to do is cancel your need to be right about that and open to the possibility that this isn't meant to be, that you can't do it unilaterally, that you know there would have to be significant change on both ends, and if the other person isn't willing to change, then things are going to stay the way they are, or at least stuck in a pattern that's not productive for you.
Right.
I don't know why, but I just flashed on a whole series of people who used to call this internet show back in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. Just a whole parade of people. Many of them were just rigidly stuck in their being right and their having anger. Rage was one of the biggest issues that we dealt with a lot in the early days of this internet show. And I just flashed on this like a parade of people going through my mind. And they're right. They're bright people, and they'll have all of the research articles, and they'll have all of the political, and they'll argue with you until the cows come home. And they're angry the whole time. And one of the biggest challenges for us is to cancel that need to be right, despite the fact that we've been programmed to believe that unless we're right, we're going to get more pain and more suffering. We might get beaten by our parents, or we might get abandoned. And so there's all of that conditioning that I might have to overcome on the path to being willing to let go of that obsession with being right. Another thing that came to me was, the Indra story. Do you know the Indra story from Joseph Campbell? I've talked about it on the show before.
I don't. Indra was a Hindu god, wasn't?
Yeah,
Basically,
you know, the king of the gods, and everything was fine. But then all of a sudden, you know, he's up there in heaven, he's up there in the sky, he's up there looking down at earth, and down on the earth is Vitra. And Vitra is this monster that decided to lock up all the water on the earth. And then, of course, there's drought, and then there's fires, and there's just chaos. And Indra was really unhappy with this. But it took him a while to realize that right there by his throne is a bucket of fire bolts, lightning bolts. And so one day he realized that, and here's this, you know, Vitra down on earth wrecking havoc. And so Indra picks up a lightning bolt and smites Vitra, and all of a sudden Vitra's gone, and the waters are flowing, and things come back to life. And Indra goes, wow, what a fine boy am I. So he goes off. He says, I need to create a city for myself. I need to create a palace in that city, and I need it to be the biggest, most expansive palace anywhere, because I'm the king of the gods, and look what I did with my lightning bolt and saved the whole world. And so he goes to the architect of the gods and says, here, I need this. And the architect goes, okay, no problem. That's what I do. I'm the carpenter and architect for the gods, and I'm a god too. And so he starts building this city on this mountain, and, you know, and problem is, every time Indra comes, he goes, well, this is really nice, but, you know, I need this to be bigger and this to be more grand and this. And eventually, the carpenter, architect god says, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. He's immortal. I'm immortal. If I don't do something here, I'm going to be working on this one project my entire eternity. I can't do that. So he goes to Brahman and he says, you know, you got to help me here. This guy's off his nut. And Brahman goes, okay, don't worry about it. You know, so Vishnu sleeps in the cosmic ocean. A lotus flower grows from his navel. And it opens. Brahma is there governing the world. And so he says, don't worry about it. I'll take care of this. So The architect god goes back, and the next day at the palace, this blue-black boy, more beautiful than words can describe, walks up to the palace, and he's surrounded by all of these people, children, just marveling at his beauty. And when he speaks, his voice is like rolling thunder. And he walks into the palace and starts surveying the place, and Indra is there on his throne, and he says, "Oh, well, welcome. What brings you here?" And the young boy said with this deep, rolling voice, "Well, I heard that you decided to have a palace built that is better and more expansive and more beautiful and elaborate than any Indra before you." And Indra says, "What do you mean before me?" And the boy says, "Well, I've seen Indras come and go, and some of them have had palaces and some of them have not, but yours is by far the most expansive. It's amazing." And he goes, "What do you mean you've seen Indras come and go before me?" And the little boy says, "Well, Vishnu sleeps in the cosmic ocean. A lotus flower grows from his belly. At the top of the lotus flower, there's a Brahman. As the Brahman opens his eyes, a world comes into view, ruled by an Indra. When he closes his eyes, the world goes out of existence. He opens his eyes, another world comes into view, ruled by an Indra, closes his eyes, etc. And the Brahman lives 437,000 years. And when the Brahman dies, the lotus flower retreats, and then another lotus flower grows from Vishnu's navel, and that cycle repeats. And just think of it. In every galaxy in the universe, there's a lotus flower, and there's a Brahman, and there's the Indras that come and go." And he said, "You might have wise men in your palace who would offer to count the drops of water in the ocean or, you know, the stars in the sky, but none of them would venture to count the number of Brahma who have lived and died, let alone the Indras." And Indra is just beside himself. He's aghast. How could this be? How could there be? And of course, in the Hindu tradition, they believe in reincarnation. And just then, there's a parade of ants, an army of ants come marching by, all in file, in a formation. And the little boy laughs, and Indra is indignant and says, "What are you laughing at?" And the little boy says, "Well, don't ask unless you're willing to be hurt." And so Indra takes a sigh and says, "Okay, I ask, so teach me." And the little boy says, "You see these ants? Former Indras all. Every one of them began as an ant, moved up the ranks after 10,000 lifetimes or 100,000 lifetimes, and they moved up to king of the gods status, and then they threw their lightning bolt and they thought, 'Oh, what a good boy am I,' and then they went crashing back down to begin the whole process over." Indra goes, "I am not about to become an ant. I won't have this." So he decides that the way to not be so full of himself is to go live in a hut in the woods and become just a meditator. There's a word they have in that. He's going to become a yogi, right? And he's going to live an austere life in the woods doing nothing but meditating. Well, the problem with this is that he's the king of the gods, and he lives in a palace, and he's got this beautiful wife who's a queen, and she's got her duties, and she is not about to go off and live in the woods in a grass hut. So she goes to the priest of the gods, and she says, "You got to help me out here. I mean, I am not going to live in the grass hut in the woods." And she, and the priest says, "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." And so, you know, the priest for the gods goes to the little hut, knocks and gets entrance, and he says, "Ah, Indra, remember me?" And he goes, "Oh, yes." And he said, "Remember when you came to me and I gave you this book about politics and life and your role in the world and what the role of a king is in the flow to keep everything working smoothly?" And he goes, "Yes." He says, "Well, you have things to do. You can't sit here in this hut. And you have a wife to interact with. You've got a kingdom to run. You've got the world to protect from monsters like Vitra. do your job. It's just a job. You're just part of the whole. But get out there and do your job. Don't shirk away from it, and don't pretend that you're more than you really are. Get in the notch, fulfill your niche there, and life will go smoothly. So he talked him into it, and he went back, and everybody lived, quote, happily ever after. And when Joseph Campbell tells that story, he says, and so literally each of us are Indras in our own lives. Each of us have to figure out what is for us to do. How can we be the best we can be in the role that we find ourselves in every moment? And not being too full of ourselves and not putting ourselves down. So it's the ancient wisdom that, you know, in the book by Richard Moss, he talks about, you know, the ego can be the grandiose ego or it can be the depressive ego. It can think I'm better than everybody or it can think I'm worse than everybody. It's the same. And they've known this back in the Upanishads and the Vishnu story and the Indra story. They've known it for thousands of years. It's the same message. You are a miracle of the creative energy expressing in form. You're no better than anybody. You're no worse than anybody. You have value just because you're here. And all of that nonsense about judging, comparing, greed, avarice, prejudice, pride, all of that is in error. And it blinds you from seeing the truth of your life and living the fullest, best, most loving nature that you can express. So that's the story of Indra. And, you know, you can hear probably a little bit better telling of it with Joseph Campbell on YouTube if you just search for Indra story Joseph Campbell.
Great. Well, that's very helpful because I feel as if all of a sudden all these bloated thoughts have sort of settled down. I can take my place. We can all take our place with, you know, you were talking about the ego being either puffed up or self-diminishing, but to me it's like a constant flipping of a coin. It goes from one to the other, one to the other. You've got one, you've got the other. There isn't any resolution to that except to step away from that altogether. And that's just what you said in so many words with the Indra story. Find the balance and the place, I guess.
Yeah, find what is yours to do. And we can't, you know that in some kind of a find it in a book and it's written out. And so, you know, the best thing I've found to do with that is to just enter each moment and just ask to be shown, you know, what's mine to do here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? And just keep asking that and trusting that if I have centered myself in that space of asking to be shown and in observation, whatever flows next is going to be okay.
Mm.
And probably better than I could have figured out if I had planned it out and mapped it out for a month before that moment arrived.
Yeah.
And thought, you know, the next time this happens, here's what I'm going to do. My life experience has been that I'm far better off when I stop in the moment and ask to be shown what's mine to do here. How can I be a blessing to myself and others? So thank you for your call. And
you're welcome.
I will mute you so you can stick around for the second hour, and I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Which book by Richard Moss is that Indra story in?
It's not in an Indra story. It just made me think of one of the things that Richard Moss, the Indra story is a Joseph Campbell thing, and you can find it on YouTube if you search for Joseph Campbell and Indra.
Okay.
And the message in that story is the same as what Richard Moss talks about when he says, we can have this grandiose ego or this depressive ego, and there are two sides of the same coin.
Oh, gotcha.
All right. Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, September 23rd, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Michael's actually got someone that he is working with right at the moment, so he asked me if I would talk for a bit until he can get dialed in. So I will first invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. You can click on Start Here or scroll down to the bullseye, and they both take you to the same place. And that's where you can get started if you're not familiar with the work. You can download all the worksheets. There's Michael's book. There are special MP3s of radio shows where we've walked people through the worksheets. Lots and lots of information. I will say that I got a notice from Google this morning, so the app is now up on both the iPhone and the Android. It's been revised to take care of the printing issue, and it's actually stored on their website now. And so hopefully that takes care of all the issues that you all have been having with the app. Please let me know if you run into something else or if you have some suggestions you would like to be added to the app or added to the website. And again, if you find any links on the website that are not working, please drop me a line and let me know the URL that's not working right. And my email is Jeannie, that's J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And I'll be sure to try to get on it and get it fixed. And Susan, are we still on? I just turned your mic back on. Are we still on for Monday?
Yes.
With Chris, perfect.
Are you talking to me, Jeannie?
Yeah. Are we still, it's still scheduled for right after the show on Monday to talk to Kristen Ryman?
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, it was somebody that you had a call with.
Oh,
and,
yeah. That's
you
right.
had invited Michael to be. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you reminded me about that.
That's immediately after the radio show on Monday. And Michael will be ready for that.
I don't know.
Down. Okay.
It's fine, Jeannie. I'm so sorry. I drew a blank. So much has been happening.
That's
here.
Okay.
I
do that.
You know about that. Oh, I'm glad reminded me. I would have been there because it's on my calendar, but, man, it wasn't in my gray matter at all.
Does Michael have the number or whatever to call in, or are you conferencing him in? Or
you know, I don't know. I will write to her. I just saw her the other day. I'll send her an email. Ask. I imagine she does. I think she probably has it all, but I'll make sure. Okay.
Okay. That's perfect. That was interesting. I just came in like the last 10-15 minutes, so I'm going to have to look up that thing on the Indra, too. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Right. Well, Dr. Tim was telling it, and I had my mute on because the doorbell rang twice. A woman next door is in trouble with her telephone and needed to call the phone company, and all sorts of things were happening, and I was hoping I was getting Dr. Tim's drift, and I think I did, but I'm going to listen again, too, to that. I'm going to listen to the Joseph Campbell rendering of
awesome.
That story. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, boy.
Very good. Well, it made me
so
think, and
you?
I was looking to see if I could find it, because he was talking about the Buddha, and we had a friend that she is the assistant to a friend of ours, Kenpo, and he's supposedly the verified reincarnation of the Buddha of wisdom, and he was such a sweet person. He's like, I'm not sure his years around the sun or times around the sun, but he was like a child. Because he would, when we went to visit, he actually walked us out to a field and had us lay down in the grass and just look up at the sky. And, you know, he did things like that that a child would do. And she had sent me, and I'm not finding it right at the moment, so when Michael gets on and takes off talking so that I can multitask, I'll look it up and I'll put it, a link to it in the notes. But she compared the work, and they use different terms than we do, but she did a comparison of like five steps that they do in the Buddha tradition and how it compares to five steps of our forgiveness work. And so that's pretty cool. And so I'll try to find that and put notes. Yeah. So,
you're getting ready to ask how we're doing
or what?
Well, I was going to pester you a little bit. Because
okay, go for it.
I hear you typing and you're putting things in the notes and just finished your updating of your app and talking to India, and I was going to pester you about the amount of busy clutter in your life that you're, has it gotten over your head again?
It is busy. We've got several things going on right now. Like tomorrow I have some installers coming at 9 o'clock that are going to do this cutout in Dad's bath, in his bathtub. And it's going to cost a little more than I anticipated because the bathtub is old. It's porcelain. But underneath the porcelain is, what did they say, cast iron or something.
Yeah, cast iron. Those old tubs. Wow, you're going to cut into that? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they make this company that I found make this little step-in thing. So they actually cut a hole in the side of the bathtub, and then they fit this piece down in it so that you can actually, you can leave it open, and then he can just step in. So he'll have to step up like maybe 4 or 5 inches. But it's getting real complex for him even to sit on the – we have a transverse seat that he can sit on and then swing his legs around and get into the shower so that I can shower him. And it's getting challenging to even lift his legs and get him over in the bathtub. So this will help him to be able to get in easier. And so they say it'll only take about 3 hours for them to do it, and that they – totally enclose the bathroom, and they have vacuums and all this other stuff so that the metal fibers aren't flying around the house and stuff. But we have that going on, and we have somebody coming Saturday to give us some information about putting solar panels on the roof of the house. So there's a lot of things going on, but
And you're doing the gardening stuff. Michael was saying you're trying to get the soil back to snuff.
Yeah, we actually got 4,000 pounds of compost, organic compost, the other day and put it in the garden because a lot of the ground here is clay. And we're having to watch where we build the gardens because for a long time when, you know, I had my stepson come, he's been doing my dad's yard for several years, and there for a long time, there were certain areas of the yard that he would spray just to, like, kill out the weeds and stuff. So we can't make gardens in those areas, even though for the last 2 years I've not allowed him to spray. And, you know, I'm not sure how many years it takes for that stuff to get out of the earth, but we don't want to take a chance and plant any food in those areas. So we're kind of being cautious of that, but it was really pretty cool the other day that our compost pile started giving all these volunteer, an avocado tree and some papaya trees and all these things that don't normally grow in this area. And so I've transplanted them into pots that if we get our greenhouse put up, that we can put them in there and maybe get them to survive through the winter. And
nice.
Yeah, so it'll be really cool. We've got kiwi plants, and we have fig trees and things that really don't normally grow here, but if we can keep them in a greenhouse, I think we can keep them going. So,
how big is the greenhouse, Jeannie?
Well, I'm getting bids on it. I want to get one that's actually attached to the house, so it would just be like a three-sided greenhouse, and the fourth side will be the wall of the house. And
I see.
And if we get solar, then the greenhouse even can run on solar on cloudy days and keep
that would be moist.
And, yeah. So
you have a deal down there where you...
Yes.
Go ahead.
They're running, the house is in Virginia, and they're actually running specials right now to give, like, I don't know what they call it, but it's like an incentive to go solar instead of staying on the grid. So we're looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because it looks like, you know, we're going to be here for a while, and so we might as well make it all usable and workable. And as far as Heartland goes, we've actually got some people who are interested in perhaps living there and doing gardening and teaching gardening to young people. And so it'll be really good to use Heartland for something else if we're not going to do intensives there. And so we're talking to some people about that, and there's this one gentleman who's been an organic gardener for a long time, and he's interested in teaching. And so that would be really good because there are, especially in the Missouri area, there are actually a lot of family farms, and the kids have no idea how to continue those farms. And so it'll be really nice, you know, for somebody to teach them so that the family farms can keep going and be usable instead of just being turned into some kind of subdivision or something, you know.
Right. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I hope that works out, but that's an awful lot of irons in the fire, Jeannie. Oh, man.
I know. And we've got the next 4 or 5 days we don't have the baby, so we're hoping to get some of our projects kind of in a completion mode before we have her back and be able to just focus on what we need to do around here and get some things done.
Well,
so,
yeah.
I did run across a journal that it's probably 6 or 7 years old. And in that journal, I actually talked about clutter. So that kind of brought that back to the forefront for me to work on again. So, but, yeah,
Michael's
now with
breathing.
Us. Yeah, his microphone, if it gets too close to his mouth or nose, it sounds like Darth Vader.
He's puffing and puffing.
I'm breathing.
The monster has entered.
You know me. I always
He has. So welcome,
So
Michael.
Welcome. Thank you, dear heart. I was just delivering a beamer to someone, so she was a little bit late.
Wow. Well, that's good.
It is good. So. Life is good. Life without tools can be pretty rough, and I thank God every day for the fact that we have tools for healing the insanity that crops up, you know, so many generations of it that... I can't imagine what life would be without it. So how are you today, young lady?
Fine. I was just on Dr. Tim's, and I really didn't – I mean, Jeannie's just turned me on there. So it's been a very interesting morning with my new Iraqi friend. She taught a 15-minute demonstration of belly dancing in my Pilates class.
Oh, really?
To the class with me, and she showed them how you do it. She didn't really show them. She demonstrated. She's not a teacher. So she just turned on her music and let it rip. And, man, it is great exercise and wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And was it you, Michael, who said that belly dancing was invented by women to help women with menstrual cycles and childbirth and all that sort of thing, or was it somebody else?
I think that was somebody else, but it makes sense that, you know, getting the energy moving in the belly, a place where a lot of congestion tends to occur. You know, in naturopathic medicine, the whole cause of disease is looked at as congestion. And when you can clean up the congestion, you're going to be healthy. And certainly moving is a big part of keeping that congestion and energy flowing.
And I wonder if just visualizing clearing the cells and speaking in a sweet way to the cells, this is not my idea. Ellen was saying this the other day, that she talks to her cells. I love it. It can't hurt, right?
Absolutely. You know, when you realize that the only mechanism, I mean, each cell is an individual, and it is driven by the messages held in the unconscious mind for most people. And so if there are unconscious messages and you choose to spend time each day consciously giving your whole, you know, these 3 or 4 trillion guests that are your home, and as well, you know, only about, I think it's 12 to 14% of our DNA is human. The rest of it is all of the bacteria that we count on to live. And if you talk to them, you can give them, you can override unconscious messages of trauma and start them moving in a different direction. So, Ellen, I think you're right on with that one. I'd be with you 100%.
I don't know if she's listening. Yeah, I'll tell her you said so. I love it, too. I've already started doing it, but
sweet.
Anyway, it's very exciting. Well, yeah, the tool, basically your tool is to realize that anything that happens, any feeling we have is our own stuff. Nobody else does anything to us, and that our biggest challenge is to back off enough to know that we are not necessarily right in any situation. Dr. Tim was talking a lot about that. And if our governments could just do that, it would be so much of a shift.
Well, and you know, when we talk about you're communicating with your cells, feelings are your cells communicating with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we go to the opening words in the book of John, where we know now in Aramaic, it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. That mind energy, what we know is it forms a molecule. When we think of thought, it forms an actual molecule called a neuropeptide. The neuropeptide lands on the cell, and when it lands on the cell talks to us and says, yes, this is good stuff. I feel elated. Don't put that in me. Hate, fear, pain, the cell saying, this is not good for us. So it's the cell communicating with us. That's what feelings are.
And the cells communicate to us what we have thought unconsciously, right? That goes into the cell.
Exactly. It's telling us the quality. Feelings are telling us the quality of our creative process, of our mind energy.
Okay. Okay, good. I had to tie that little knot. Okay, good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, tell Jeannie to stop doing so many things. That's me.
Yeah. Like I have control of that. Okay.
Yeah, I'll try it again. Just this
Go
morning
ahead,
he was telling me to quit unloading the car, that he would unload it. I had gone early this morning to Sam's Club, and that I could unload once he brought it into the house. And then I went out and picked up one more bag, and he says, I told you.
Well, that's good.
Well, I requested you.
Okay.
Are we having a marital spat here, Bo?
No.
It might.
Okay.
But
well,
I did make that request of her.
Yeah.
Exactly the request that you suggest I make, I made of her this morning. You know, as she's unloading, it's like, you went and did the grocery shopping. Honey, let me unload the car. Oh, okay. 5 minutes later, she's out there unloading the car. Honey, you know, there's lots of stuff we need to do inside. We need to put the groceries. Let me unload the car. Stop.
Yeah.
But
that's,
you know,
nice. Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed.
You don't have to do
Iraqi
this all on your
friend.
Own.
Yeah. There's a thing happening with my new Iraqi friend already.
Right.
She came and taught the belly dancing, and then we went to Costco because she has no car. So she needs help with the grocery shops once in a while. So we went there, and she is one of those people that is so eager to help and keep you from suffering, that she would grab things I was perfectly able to carry and carry them for me so that I wasn't even, I worried about her. It seemed like it was to the extreme where I thought, what has happened here? What's generating this? And this is a whole other thing, and I don't even know. And I could talk to her about it, I'm sure. She's such a wonderful woman. But,
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, it's powerful to hear you say that in a culture where, I was just listening this morning, Dad was listening to a Christian television station, and there's some example of some immigrant who did something terrible, and now in their minds, I mean, they have no clue that the word neighbor means anybody that you think about, and you're supposed to be the space of love for your neighbor, and the hateful venom that were coming out of these people's mouths over, yeah, somebody attacked somebody. But, you know, I mean, the number of attacks, the number of crimes committed by immigrants is far less than the American population, if you look at the statistics. But they turn this around, and then they've got this vile, vicious language, the mind energy, and they have no idea what they're doing to themselves, their own cellular structures, what it's doing
right.
to them. And, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but once in a while I'll post on Facebook a comment about some wonderful immigrants that we know. And if you look at the truth about it, immigrants built the country and immigrants have made such monumental contributions to the culture. And they're just plain hate people who want to drive them into the ground and will come up with every little thing that anybody's done wrong. It's like, gee, you know, I wish you'd turn that, you know, device that you're using to, you know, that microscope you're putting them under and put yourself under the microscope. Just listen to your own language. And in fact, I've been thinking since I listened this morning, they have a feedback, email feedback, and I've been thinking about writing them because it was just pure vile. And, you know, if you listen to Christ talks about it, you listen to the scriptures and they talk about the sojourner in your country and how you are to treat them. And the way you treat them is lovingly, gently, and with respect, not like they're your enemy. Now, are there enemies? Are there people we need to be careful of? Absolutely. But to paint everybody with that brush is just pure racism and pure hatred. And so I'm glad to hear you speak of that. You know, we've got in-laws that are from Philippines, and they're just so wonderful. And this woman has worked so hard to raise her daughter and make a life for her. And, you know, and actually moving into senior years, went back to school and got her license to practice phlebotomy and works in a medical office. And, you know, she's held down four jobs at a time, and it's just really insane, the conversation that the right is having about people who need our help. And, you know, especially people coming from the South, in a lot of cases, they're countries that American businesses have raped. And that's why those people need to escape.
Michael.
Such poverty and such toxicity. We've poured and rained such chemical waste and toxicity and junk on them, stolen their wealth, and they're in such poverty. Yeah, they should be coming to our door. They should be in droves because of what has been done. It's only fair and balanced. But then people who live in the hate language don't think in those terms. They don't think at all. All they do is repeat, 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 you know, the hate dogma. So definitely one to, I'll breathe some more on that and do a worksheet or two as well.
Yeah, I know. It's ongoing. Yeah, I was worried about her, though, because it almost was as if she was afraid to let me carry my own packages, afraid for something. And, you know, I told her, she invited me in for lunch, and I said, well, I actually am very active on a radio show that's interactive. It's a seminar. It's an ongoing forever seminar that's spiritual / psychological. And she said, oh, I love that kind of thing. Give me the number. I'm imitating
cool.
her accent. Well, I did, and I told her she should come on, and it might seem like mysterious at first or hard to grasp, but she would catch on. She's brilliant. She's lovely and brilliant. But, you know, here she is. She's a bright light, very loving, beautiful to look at, a lovely dancer, and yet on the way home she says, I get migraine headaches. And I'm thinking, well, there
Ouch.
It all is. And then she
yeah.
said, when I hear a siren...
Get her hand in the Avicen.
I just... Yeah.
You know, when the guy who invented the Avicen originally, he had sister-in-law who for 20 years had daily migraine headaches. And he
wow.
invented the Avicen to help her, and she hasn't had headaches in 10 years.
Cool. I will do that. I may even loan
yeah.
her mine and have her use
yeah.
it for a while. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, she's living with you?
No.
She's living in your home?
No, she was resettled by Bethany Christian Services, which is the refugee resettlement agency in our area. And she lives
right.
about 15 minutes away from me. And how did I hear from her? Hear about her? Oh, I heard about her from my refugee, the woman who's the head of the refugee center. She asked me if I could do something for her. She's a single woman, escaped Iraq. Because her husband was abusive and wanted to come to the U.S. but spent 8 years in Turkey waiting to get here. And her little boys that she had with her are now teenagers. Imagine, she's a really strong woman. But here she is in this country, and she says, every day I dance. When I feel upset, and I feel upset a lot, I dance.
Sweet. Well,
yeah.
I can see you breathing her, and it sounds like her compulsive need to please comes from, you know, a lot of times people in abusive relationships, men or women, are, you know, always wanting to please in order not to be abused. And that might be an issue. If she starts to understand the work, that might be an issue. You help her to process through and let go of.
Yeah, I would love it. Well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has the number, and she might even call in and whatever. But she's,
sweet.
I'd
love,
love to meet you. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And what's her name?
Marwa.
Well,
and,
we'll look forward. And Marwa, if you happen to be listening, we'll look forward to hearing your sweet voice and learning more about your life in Iraq and Turkey and what it took to get here and, you know, base of support for healing and really thriving in America.
Right. I hope so. Okay. Thanks, Michael.
All right, young lady. Well, you have a blessed day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay. Give Tim a hug for us.
I will. Thanks, Michael.
All right.
Bye, Tini.
All right, dear heart, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything else happening in the chat room?
Nope, it is all quiet.
Well, then I'm going to jump into reading. Why is this happening to me again? Let's see, we're almost to October. It's about right number of pages left to take us to the end of the year. So for those who are following along in our reading, we're doing a couple of paragraphs from the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. It's a book that's out of print. It's actually been out of print for several years, but there are still lots of copies available on eBay or on Amazon, either one of them. I mean, other used bookstores have them too. I'm kind of surprised how many people I make contact with and say, yeah, well, I found your book in the ABC used store in my town or what have you. But anyway, you can find it on Amazon or eBay. And or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download the book free. And our friend from Iraq very likely speaks Farsi. The book is free online. You can download it, print it, or read it digitally online. English, German, Russian, Swedish. Well, Swedish one isn't on. We've got hard copies of that, but... So we're at the point where we're talking about relationships. And I read the key thought and the quote from Albert Schweitzer that says, the one thing I know, the only ones among you who will really be happy are those who will have thought and found out how to serve. And so the idea of this radio show is to be of service, to offer support to people in understanding these tools. And we are happy and delighted to give you everything we've got in the way of the use of the tools. So any questions you have, we're here to answer them. So I'm on the top of the page of 116, the chapter on clarifying love. And I offer Richard the thought. Real relationship is dead in the glamour industry's definition of love. Have you ever felt used as a sexual object and then thrown away? Anyone who buys into the common media definition of love becomes a sexual object in their own mind and in the minds of others. Of course, like other objects, they're thrown away after use, I added. I've been on both sides of that scenario, Richard said sadly, and I don't understand why it has to be that way. I would love to be in a true, honest, and real relationship. That's impossible until I straighten out some of my conflicting realities. And that's a brilliant insight from his side, because as long as the unconscious mind holds conflicting realities, sooner or later those realities are going to come up in the context of relationship. And if we don't know that that conflict is an internal dynamic, there's never been a conflict for anybody in a relationship. It's never happened ever in all of eternity, and it never will. But there are people who have conflicting realities within them that project those realities on others, and then they pretend that their conflicted thoughts and feelings and trauma belongs to somebody else. When they clean up conflict in their minds and someone has a different approach, direction, or opinion from them, instead of being conflict, they will live as the presence of love. They'll be settled inside. They'll be serene inside. And they'll have the highest possible intelligence that a human could have to move forward in that situation that someone else is functioning differently. So, you know, when we're in conflict, because there are conflicting energies within us. When I remove conflict, there is serenity in me, and I might be standing in a room with 20 other people who all want to go in a different direction, but I don't have to conflict with any one of them because they're going in a different direction. I only conflict when there are conflicted realities in me. So Richard's really stepping into some sadness here about the conflict in his life. I think you're right, I offer to him. We tend to live exactly what we've learned. And if we've been used and abused, it takes work to live differently. Relationships are a wondrous place for nurturing, support, and healing. If we can remove the confusing and conflicting realities we've hooked into them. My experience of people who reject or cannot form long-term relationships is they have so much pain in their quote-unquote relationship file, they have to keep on the move or they will have to face what's hidden inside of them. And people who are always leaving relationships, people who are always, you know, moving, always on go, it's because it's not because they're trying to escape something in the external world. They're attempting to escape their projections on the external world. So this idea of looking at what's inside of us, and Richard feeds back to me, I've been on the run for too long. Who promotes this insanity? Why is there such confusion in the world, he asked. And of course, the confusion isn't in the world. The confusion's between our ears. We can't be confused by an event that happens in the world. But an event can bring up conflicting and confused realities in us, and we'll say, well, I'm confused about that. No, I'm not. You've never been confused about anything in your whole life. But if there's something confusing in your mind, an event, a happening, a person, a situation, a circumstance, a business event, can bring up that confusion. When I realize confusion is nothing but an aberrant perceptual construct of my mind, then when confusion comes up, I apply forgiveness to remove confusion. Then I'm finished with confusion, which is pretty simple and straightforward. So he says, why is there so much confusion? To answer that, noticer receives the benefits of a twisted understanding of love. Anyone who distorts the truth to gain something for themselves is in so much pain and lives in such inward poverty that they cannot live honestly. They think they must manipulate to have anything for themselves to survive. Have you ever noticed that the promoter of the idea that love is self-sacrifice always has their hand out? And those who feed on abusing others push the idea that love is gracious acceptance of their abuse. Those who promote love as sex have a lot more sex objects of whom to take advantage. And those with a victim mentality get the benefit of playing out their role to which they've dedicated, pardon me, they are dedicated and addicted, I added. Well, I'm not quite keeping up with everything you're saying, Michael, but I get its importance. I suppose I have to clean up some of the clouds I've allowed my mind to accept and build more brain cells about what love really is before I fully grasp it. However, you've got my attention again. I have a question that has bothered me all my life, Michael. What is love? And so we're going to complete the reading there, and we'll leave the question. And, you know, come back to the show tomorrow with a written definition. Sit down and write out your definition of love. And we'll see how it fits tomorrow. It's a core principle, a key in the whole healing process to straighten that definition out. So honored and delighted that you're here in the conversation, and we've got about 18 or so minutes left. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? Are you using the tools? If you have questions about any of the tools and how they operate, our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you are listening to the show and you have a question or a thought, all you do is push 1 on your keypad. I don't know what you do if you've got a dial phone, but there aren't too many of those left. But you push 1, and that, through the magic of technology, raises a hand in our control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation. So if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, call in 563-999-3581. Push 1. How can we support you? What's on your mind? How can we refine any of these principles? If you're not using the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to the website. Again, it's yhyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, click the button that says Start Here. That will open a whole series of links and walk you through the whole process. And or you can go to the homepage, to the website, and just scroll down. And, you know, Jeannie and Susan have done a whole new structure, totally shifted the website, and it's beautiful. And it makes things really easy to access. You can just scroll down to that homepage, and it walks you through every area of the website. I mean, it's about a 20,000 or so page website now, so it's pretty complicated. But the way they've laid it out with these new links is beautiful, easy, and there's a wealth of information that will feed you for eternity if you choose to go there. And, of course, if you want to do the forgiveness process, it's there live on the website. You can do it. You can fill in the worksheet, print it from there. You can download the worksheets. There are several different worksheets for different workshops, and there are several versions of the main worksheet, the Reality Management Forgiveness Process. You can also go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. It's free. It's very private. When you download the average app on your phone, if you look at the permissions required, there are 10, 15, 20 different permissions. And, including they can give your number away to others, sell it. I mean, there's just all kinds of crazy stuff. And this app was specifically designed to stay private, so there's only one permission required, and that is for the app to use your internet connection. Otherwise, there are no permissions. When you complete a worksheet, you can print it. And if you're going to print, of course, you have to have somewhere to save it. So it will ask you for permission to save to your drive. They're the only two permissions involved in this app. And we did that specifically because, when people start really digging into forgiveness, it can be pretty private, pretty intense, pretty personal, and, something that you sure don't want anybody looking at. So that's why we've set it up so that there are no permissions other than the two that are necessary to for the operation, electrical and mechanical operation of the app. And otherwise, you can rest assured that whatever you put in there, you can trust it. You can put anything in it. It's yours, and nobody else has any access. And so if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. If I were in your hometown doing this conversation and walked down off the platform and you were out in the audience, what would you be coming over right now? If I heard what has been said so far on the show, what would you be walking over to me and asking? Now's the time to ask. Push one and let's have a conversation. Machine? Do we have anything happening in the chat room or anything happening in the phone queue?
No, it is all quiet. Michelle's with me in the chat room.
Oh, hey there, young lady. How are you?
Several people
maybe
on the
Michelle,
board, nobody's hand.
Okay. Well, Michelle, I don't know if you have telephone access. If you can, would love to hear how things are in Mexico for you. Hope that you're having a wondrous journey there and that things are rocking well. If you can call and say hello, that would be sweet. Other than that, if you're out there in listener land, can we answer a question for you? Is it the stage in the workshop or in the and I liked, by the way, Susan, your description of the show today as it's an ongoing workshop. It really is an eternal workshop because of the work that people do is just phenomenal on the show. And so we would love to do some work with you. We would love to support you. We would love to answer your questions. So 563-999-3581. It's meant to be a dialogue, not a monologue. And so if we don't have any other questions with everything that I've got on my plate today, we're deep in getting gardens ready for winter and having the beamer this morning to have delivered. And we've got another Avison to work with today. So all of the things that we're doing with not traveling anymore to just keep the flow happening so that we can be comfortable here being with Jeannie's dad and taking care of him and taking care of Aria Rain and doing the radio show and everything else we're about and taking this work on a global scale. So if there are no questions, then I'm going to say let's call the show for today. And look forward to tomorrow's questions. And I'd suggest if you're, you know, you're using the tools, that you create a notebook or have a file on your phone that you use to keep questions right there at hand. I know that, you know, oftentimes in the middle of a conversation, if I don't have a note, oh, what was I going to ask? What was that thought? Well, this is the place. We want to offer you everything we know about these ancient tools, everything. You know, there is, I can remember one of my early mentors in a different teaching that I was engaged in way back years ago. They were like, he had listened in on one of my presentations. They're like, well, that's from another. You can't present that. That you won't have anything to present in a future workshop if you give that away. You just have to restrict it. And not. It's like, not true. I have found if we can give everything we've got away, and when we've given it all away, we get another piece of the puzzle. So we're here to give it away. We're here to support you. And if you have a thought, one last time, we'll ask for a hand to go up. And if not, then let's call the show for today. Miss Eni?
There are no hands up.
Well, then I think we should just get some of these other projects done. And everybody have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
A hand just went up.
Okay, great. Oh, let's go for it.
541, I think it's Miss Julie.
Hey there, young lady. How are you? How are things out there on the West Coast? Hello, Julie. Are you mute challenged?
Oh, yes. Now I'm here. Here I am. Hi.
Oh, good. Welcome.
It's pretty clear here. We don't have so much smoke blowing in because we did get some rain. And although I heard another fire started in somewhere in California, so it's good, though. Today is a good day. So I went down to my reunion last weekend. And,
oh, great. You made it. Cool.
And I practiced my driving skills again and my driving attitude again. And anyway, I had a very fruitful, wonderful reunion, just talking to people, all people from the past, but in the present, sharing our vision again. You know, we lived together for 4 years in high school. And anyway, it was really fruitful because they everybody had these chunks of their lives that they'd lived and these awarenesses and wisdoms that they had to share. And
right.
We were really a very cohesive class, those of us who continue to come to reunions anyway.
Right.
So I'm just giving a report. But I was immersed in all this love and appreciation that they had for me, which I didn't expect. I thought they were talking behind my back and teasing me, really. I mean, I had that reality then a little bit.
Mm,
but
right.
They loved me, and so that was really validating. And I come home here, and I'm with my partner, who just still is immersed in hostility. I mean, he's just hostility wherever he goes. And it's really, I'm seeing the difference so much that no matter what my skills are, you know, it's just not enough. I can't do his work for him. And
right.
Yeah. So that's just where I'm at right now. Trying to eat better, trying to regain my skills in every arena, and take care of Julie again, because I slipped into taking care of these, you know. So got to face that.
Well, we'll hold the space.
Did you play? They had asked you to play at the reunion?
I did practice. I was ready, but there wasn't a real piano. And I practiced on my keyboard, which I had forgotten the keys are all slanted at an angle rather than flat, which I could have adapted to, but I didn't feel satisfied enough with it, so I didn't bring my keyboard. You know, I want the satisfaction. A real piano is just satisfying. But I visited my old boyfriend's daughter, and she has a beautiful piano and two sons. And so we all connected. It was really fun. I was there with them for 5 hours. My boyfriend had passed away a year ago, her father, and her husband also passed away the same week. That is weird. Yeah, she had a lot to process, so that was good. Anyway, I'm just reporting that I just, big breath here, tell the truth. Just seeing the only way is the way, and I can't get everybody to do it with me, so I just have to do it with me doing it, which is our team, and it makes such a difference. It just makes such a difference. So I'm grateful for you again.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying thank you.
Yeah. Are you guys going to do that? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Are we going to do?
Well, you can respond if you want, but one question I do have is, how are the plans coming along for the still point?
We're rocking
point.
On it. You know, we're planning on doing a monthly. It will be the second Saturday of October.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I think, the 9th. I think the first Saturday is the second, and the second Saturday, if I remember correctly, it's the 9th. So yeah, we're planning on it. And
did you not get the newsletter with the announcement on it?
When did you send it? Because I haven't been checking my email very regularly.
Gosh, it's been a couple weeks ago, I guess.
I'll look it up.
And it is the 9th.
Okay. Great.
But all the information is in there, and then we're going to do on the Wednesday after. So it's the second Saturday of every month. And then the Wednesday after, we will do the support session, you know, questions, answers, processing, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll look that up and get it into my calendar. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cool. And
anyway,
there are three levels of doing it. It's a membership type of thing. We decided to set up since, you know, we had just done one last month and we got such powerful feedback and experience with it that we decided we're going to do one every month. So there's a membership that you can do one. You just do one session. So it will include two different videos plus a video of the actual day's workshop. It'll all be done via Zoom. So if somebody just participates in one, cost is $150. It'll include the workshop on Saturday, the two videos, or three videos actually, the MindShifters introduction and to the actual, it's actually a $40 video of MindShifters introduction to still point breathing. It will include another MindShifters session, and it will include the video for the workshop of the day that someone participates. So and then the following Wednesday evening from 7 to 9, we'll do Eastern time. We'll do processing and conversation. So people can do just one, or they can do a package of three. So a single one is $150. A package of three is $300. Includes videos of each workshop they do, plus those videos I mentioned, and the Wednesday evening follow-up. And or people can do a year. And so there'll be 12 consecutive sessions doing the same thing. So there's those three levels. But if you look in the newsletter, that's all laid out and explained.
And
it's all there.
I will also put links to the website because it's on their website as well under events. And I'll put links to that in today's notes.
Oh, okay. Good. Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it's happening. I love it. And it's a good way to stay in touch.
It is.
It really works. Yeah.
Well, I'm refining the skill of using the Still Point tool. The MindShifter tool, I think, they're important tools. And, you know, so we'll be covering a lot of territory as the year unfolds with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Good.
If there's anybody listening that wants to get on the mailing list, you can drop Jeannie a note, Jeannie, at whyagain.org. And she'll communicate with you about that. Or you can go to the website, whyagain.org, go to the bottom of the page, and there's a link there you can just click to sign up for the mailing list, and you'll be rock and roll.
Okay, cool.
If you scroll down. Yeah, if you go to the homepage, too, you can scroll down. It's down toward the bottom of the page is the flyer for the 90-hour intensive, you know, which you've already done, but for other people, there's a flyer. We've got a 90-hour intensive self-study that's there, and the flyer is on the website, and also the membership for Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing on a monthly basis is right there on the homepage, down toward the bottom. So.
Okay.
Cool.
Is that the codependence one that you're going to do again, too?
Well, we don't have another intensive schedule we're looking at. We've been had an ear to the ground. Jeannie's been talking about maybe doing a Women Healing Women. We may do a teacher training online and or we may do Laws of Living. Depends what requests look like. But at this point, we haven't had enough interest to schedule another online intensive. But people who, I mean, you've got access to that whole 90 hours of video work, having been a participant in the codependence to independence communication practicum.
That's
and you've got access to the private Facebook page for the food support and the Trello app for recipes and such. So that's all part of that. And now that package is available for anyone who didn't do it, available for purchase at $600 for 90 hours of some really, while you were part of the process, was some pretty profound stuff happened in that workshop, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's good. It's always good.
That was pretty amazing. So that's available.
The food part is so important. That's what I need to get back to. That's my next goal.
Go for it. Well, I saw you writing that goal down and getting on it today.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Blessings.
Blessings. Blessings to you.
All right. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
And
so
also
we're down
in the newsletter is the information on the intensives that you just mentioned as well, and saying please contact us if you're interested in one or the other, because the interest level will determine probably which one we do next. So information is on the website. Yep.
Yep. So if you're interested in the Women Healing Women intensive, you're interested in why is this happening to me again? With teacher training or without? Well, actually, normally at Heartland, the why teacher training is usually a 16-day process. And the first 9 days of it is is the why is this happening to me again workshop, and that covers, you know, the forgiveness process, why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, purpose, personal power, and commitment, empowered to heal, mind shifters, hands-on energy field work, still point breathing. So that's the 9-day component of it. And then the next 9 days, teacher training. So we're probably going to do that if and when we do it over a 16-week period. So the participation, some people might not be interested at all in teacher training, but they can do the 9-day, the first 8 weeks of it. And then if you decide you want to do the teacher training, then you can do the whole 16 weeks. And Laws of Living, we haven't actually set a time frame for it. There's a lot of material to cover in it, so it'll probably be more like a 20-week intensive online. So anyway, we appreciate each and every one of you, and thanks for lending us your ear. And, you know, if there's any show in particular that's interesting to you, go to the website. You can go to the microphone on the homepage, click it, drill down, and you can download an MP3 of the last 10 years of shows. By the way, the best way to get all the shows, because many programs that you can listen to podcasts on only give you a maximum of 300. If you go to iHeartRadio, you get all through 3,500 or whatever shows for the last 10 years, and you can download them, listen, what have you. So thanks for playing. Have a blessed one. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.